PPI.org. I just lost my thing. Okay, well, good evening. You are tuned to KFBI 90.3 Minneapolis, and you're listening to Disability on Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Chris Engineers, thank you, Chris. Charlene Dahl is my research team. Thank you, Charlene. Good evening, Charlene.
Good evening.
Tonight, the topic is Vitals App. Joining us is Stan Allen. Stan is board of directors for co-chair for ARC of Minnesota, also chief communications officer for Vitals Awareness Services. And he's going to be talking to us about the Vitals app continuing to expand nationally to better serve people with disabilities and mental health conditions. And joining us as well with him is Candace Ellis. Candace is a former social worker who works loosely with people who, or closely, sorry, with people who can greatly benefit from this service. And she will be speaking with about this as well. So good evening, guys.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you for having us, Sam.
Thank you so much for joining me. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Good. So let's see. I want to start with you, Stan, and talk about what is Vitals Awareness Services and what part do you play in this?
So I could say a lot about Vitals Aware Services. That's the parent company of the creators of the Vitals app. It's a company that's been around since really 2017. Really got going in 2018 with bringing on different departments. But we've created technology. We've created a couple of apps. They're designed to keep people who have various conditions and disabilities safe when they are around first responders, law enforcement, as well as if 911 is called and they have an account with us. It's technology that communicates your customize your special needs, maybe at a time when you're not able to process or communicate. And I can get to more depth to that. I'm the communications chief for Vitals. We're still a small company. So I also wear a lot of hats. I help with partnership development. I do advocacy partnerships, and that's why Candace is here right now, because she is one of our partners. So that's enough about me. I'll hand it off to Candace.
Oh, you're a very interesting person. Come on now. So how about you, Candace? Give us some history about you and how you got involved with Vitals Aware Services.
All right. So I just want to do a slight correction. So I am a mental health practitioner, and my history has been working in the group home under what is called the 245D, the foster or community home-based services with DHS, since 1999. So I've been in the game for a while. When Stan approached me, when I heard about Vitals, I was very intrigued and I was interested because of working in the field, starting from a direct care support, helping individuals inside their homes and in the community. I see the benefits of having such an app, especially with high functioning individuals that you don't really see the underlying medical conditions or the intellectual disabilities that can play a challenge with being in the community. So that's how the partnership with Coach Candace and Vitals came about.
Ah, okay. And so you work closely with people involving this Vitals Aware.
Correct. So not only am I a mental health therapist, but I also do help small providers that either want to come into the service that works with individuals that will utilize this app, or providers that are already in service. So I help them with operations from start to finish. As I said, this is just a great opportunity for them to assist the clients that they serve.
So either one of you, I guess, how did this get started?
I think that's me. I was going to go into that. Okay. So thanks for asking. We started, it was a small group of people who were volunteering, and they volunteer for nonprofits. And what happens is they find an issue that the nonprofit is trying to address, and they try to offer recommendations and solutions to a problem. And so they did focus groups. They started working with the Autism Society of Minnesota, one of our founding partners. Another partner was the Minnesota Brain Alliance. And we did focus groups. We did focus groups with individuals and families. And this came up as a pressing issue, the intersection between people living with different things that make them vulnerable at times, and how they interact with law enforcement and first responders, how it's unsafe sometimes, and it's very it's I mean, it could lead to even something more tragic. And then we also started doing focus groups with law enforcement, and they kind of agreed that this is an issue. And so we piloted with St. Paul PD. We had 50 individuals and a group of officers that piloted this to make sure everything worked. And then we started expanding in 2018. We reached about 70 different police departments in Minnesota right before COVID hit. And we were expanding to different states.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and then, you know what happened then? Things slowed down.
Yes, we know what happened then. Jeez. So is this for all people with disabilities, or what are the qualifications for using this app?
That's a great question too. We started off with autism, but you know, as we started doing this, the people that felt like they could use this, it just the list grew. I have a list in front of me of different organizations that were or conditions, like, of course, anxiety, ADHD. We have a number of people who have dementia, Alzheimer's, anxiety, people who have panic attacks, bipolar, blind, deaf, hard of hearing. We have people who have epilepsy. We have people who schizophrenia. The list just goes on and on. We have people who are diabetic. And so
that was going to be my next one.
Anybody that, you know, that they have something that could make them vulnerable in a time of need, they're a good candidate. People who have allergies also get excited about this. So the list keeps growing as we...
I see. I don't want to really talk about the cost, but is this a free app, or how does that work?
We don't have to spend a lot of time on cost, but we do. We have to charge for the technology. And I should explain how it works too, just so people have an understanding.
We'll get to how it works, but I just want to know, like, so you do charge. Does insurance, I shouldn't really quote costs on the radio, but does insurance touch any of that charge?
We are fully approved, not insurance, but we're fully approved through the Minnesota waiver system. And so people who have a waiver will get reimbursed for the charges. We are approved that way. And as we expand, we intend to do that in every state. Our attitude is, if somebody truly can't afford this, we're going to make sure we find a way to get it.
And maybe eventually you can partner with insurances.
Yes.
This would be a benefit. So.
Yeah, you are reading my mind. And I think that insurance companies absolutely get excited about this. This is something that, you know, it makes sense for insurance. It's something that mitigates. It's something that prevents. So of course, that is a good place for us to be. We also have, and I should have mentioned this, ARC Minnesota, you know, I'm on the board, but before I got on the board,
yes.
They were one of our original partners too. And one year what they did, because they get donations on a regular basis. And they had one individual that donated basically anybody that wants Vitals can have if they go through ARC. So we run special programs and partnerships with advocacy groups because we really truly don't want to turn anybody down for these services. It's just too important.
Talk to me about that Vitals app. How does it work? Let's go into the nitty gritty stuff.
Candace, do you want me to take that or you want to take
it? You can go ahead and take that, Stan.
Okay. And you can fill in the blanks.
Yes. So
the Vitals app, we created a couple of apps. One goes with an individual who creates account or their caregiver, family member that might be handling their account. So there's an app there that they download. We also have another app that once let's say a police department wants to have the technology, they sign a contract with us and they give permission for the officers that they want to have the app. So there's an app for first responders. And we also have this technology where little hardware, they're called beacons. Some of them look like little car fobs or keychains. We have cards. We have stuff that can be attached to a belt or a shoe. And how the technology works is somebody downloads the app, an individual or family member, they create a profile. The profile can normally has a little thumbnail picture of the individual, a description of them like height and weight. It could have primary, secondary conditions that they have, medications they may be taking, behavior triggers, de-escalation techniques, all that can be put into the app. And when everything else is in doubt, it can have emergency contact information. If I'm in trouble, call this person. And so you create that. And now what happens is when a police department or a first responder agency has our technology, anytime they come within 80 feet of an individual with our technology, it transmits a secure private signal. It's a Bluetooth technology to our secure private cloud service. And that information is temporarily put on the officer's smartphone. If something is looking like a person needs help, they can click on it. And now they have all the information that the individual or the family member put in there to help that individual. Once they leave that 80 feet barrier, the information goes away. They don't keep the information. One other thing, Sam, the other feature in our most basic service is our profile 911. That allows anybody anywhere to have our technology. You don't have to have a police department. And what that means is we're in partnership with a company called Rapid SOS, and they have technology in 85% of all the emergency response 911 centers in the country. And so in that situation, you create an account. And if 911 is called because there's an emergency involving an individual who has Vitals app, now that information automatically goes to the dispatcher. And, you know, what they normally do is they ask a whole bunch of questions while you're in crisis. That eliminates some of that need because all that information is already on their screen automatically because you have an account with us. So that's how it works in a nutshell. I mean, I can answer questions.
Sure. First of all, what platforms does this work on? Is it just Apple platform, or do we have both Apple and Android?
It is Apple and Google Play Store. Yeah. Both platforms.
Okay. So both platforms. All right. And do we have it on computer as well? So like the 911, do they pull it up on their computer? How does that work?
So we used to have it on a computer. We no longer, because quite frankly, everybody is using a smartphone. And then we want it to be mobile. And so how it works with the dispatchers is, let's say you're at the park, and let's just say a child is with his or her mother, and they have an episode. They get hurt. They fall off of a swing or something. They break a leg. They call 911. And if that person has one of our accounts, that information, once it connects to the dispatcher, the Vitals app information flies onto their screen. And they have
okay. So I will say that not everyone with a disability has a smartphone. Absolutely. You know, there are still people out there who either for whatever reason don't have one, can't use one with their dexterity service, you know, problems. What do you do with that?
So if an individual doesn't have a smartphone, but they are being helped by a caregiver, then that works because somebody else is going to manage their account for them.
Gotcha.
If the individual is a self, can I use the term self-advocate? I'll use it in
sure.
This,
yep, absolutely.
In this notion, we have a lot of self-advocates that manage their own profiles. Mm-hmm. And that they do that. If a self-advocate isn't able to do that, this might not be the best solution for them, to be honest with you. And I want to be honest with you about that. Mm-hmm. It's not the best solution for everybody. But for most people, either if you're an individual that's taking care of yourself, it's a perfect thing for you. If you're an individual where people are helping take care of you, it's a perfect thing for you too. We also have, and the last thing I'll say for individuals that they may, like, especially some people with autism, especially young people, they might like remove, they just remove things from them. We have, mm-hmm. That's why we have folks that are attaching it to a belt or a shoe.
And when so you now, say attaching it, like what the fob that they have,
yes.
What is that? Is that just something that shows the information on somebody's, you know, on a specific person's phone if they get, like you said, X amount of feet away from them?
That's a great question. The fob doesn't have any information on it. It never does. All the fob does is transmit a signal when it gets close enough to first responder, and all the information is stored on our secure cloud server, and that information is temporarily brought down onto the smartphone.
So okay, the fob, so somehow
if you lose the fob, it's not a big deal. You can get another one. Nobody, and there's no information on it.
I see. But somehow it triggers, how do they know it's that person? Like if it doesn't have any info, how does it know? Let's say I have a fob. How would they know it belongs to me?
So your fob has a number, an ID number attached to it,
mm-hmm.
that we connect to our system.
And it's
a pretty intense number. So
they can deprogram that number if I lost the fob.
Absolutely. They could deprogram the number, but also that you would know if you lost the fob. So that's a quick thing to happen. But you know, if you lose it, a lot of people won't have a clue what's going on with that anyway. And if it doesn't match, it won't. I mean, we haven't had many situations with that as an issue.
Right.
Yeah.
So then also, you talked about, you know, privacy, where when a police officer or some identifying source gets close to the individual, something from the cloud will kind of identify and show them, you know, that they could click on this information. So the information is never stored and they can't download the information. I'm just asking about privacy issues. You know, yes. Privacy yes. is such a huge thing now.
It's a huge thing. I knew you would ask me privacy questions.
Talk about that.
So, I mean, this is a major thing for us. And this is quite frankly why we partner with Autism Society and ARC Minnesota and Pacer Center, because we get these questions thrown at us. And so we, you know, there's nothing that's 100% perfect. If somebody says that, they're lying, but we have bank level security,
right?
And encryption. And what happens is, so we learn this from the folks that we serve, that most people do not want the officer to always have the information. And that's why we create a system where they have it temporarily at a time of need. And then once they step out of that boundary, they don't have it anymore.
Okay. That's good to know. I'd like to play the other side of the coin, though.
Yes.
So you said the officers that are interested in having this technology, you can do that. But as you know, especially in Minneapolis, but I think it's happening all over the place here in the U.S., that mm-hmm. police, you know, levels of what they do is getting changed. And
yes.
Sometimes you don't always have, I'm not sure the correct, but a social worker or somebody who was trained in mm-hmm. as much de-escalation.
Mm-hmm.
So shouldn't it be mandatory that all police officers have something so
yeah.
they can know? Because we've had a lot of oopses where, you know, if they would have just known that that person was deaf, or if that person had,
yeah.
you know, these escalation issues, maybe things could have turned out a little different.
Candace, do you want to, I mean, I can answer this question when you come behind me, or do you want to?
No, I can go ahead. I think it should definitely be mandatory. However, I think that's we're working on that, correct, Stan, to make sure that it is
yes.
in the hands, and it's available. Yes. However, it is up to, you know, the police department if they go ahead and download and use this app. We do see the benefits, of course, of using it, as you stated, just with how the world is right now, and
yes.
especially with individuals that have those unforeseen conditions that you can't see with the naked eye,
right?
To help with the de-escalation.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. I would love for it to be mandatory for all of the officers. When we talk to police departments, sheriff departments, we talk about what we've done now is at the beginning, we kind of really left it up to them. And we still do that. But now what we do is we allow them to have access to the technology. So it doesn't matter how many officers they have, they can have access to it. They have to be approved through the system. It can't be a random officer saying, I'm
right.
It has to go through the department. But yeah, we absolutely believe that this technology should be used by all officers. We believe that.
Yeah. I wonder if there's some way to do more advocacy with this, because I mean, as much as you wonder if it can be misused, but you know, obviously if the officer has to be approved, you don't approve an officer necessarily for going to whatever they're going to with the problems that are happening. So they just get, you know, they're on duty, they get those things. So I do see a use for advocating for being able to access this if they need it, regardless of, you know, if they're quote approved or not.
Yes, I think that is going to be the next step for us as we stay in this state and move to other states, advocating public policy, changing, you know, making sure that this is available really everywhere. And because like, why wouldn't you? I mean, at some point, you know, if you're a city and your neighboring city doesn't have the technology, mm-hmm. that's not fair to the residents, in my opinion. But yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that. I do want to say though, and it's important to mention this, the Vitals app is no substitution for training. And
yes,
we need officers to be trained. We need them to understand that they need to treat everybody with dignity and respect and care. And, you know, this does not help, you know, if people have implicit bias, it can help a little bit because it can, you know, if you have five officers and all of them have the Vitals app and everybody's and things fly up on their smartphone, then somebody there is going to see there's something going on with this individual. And so maybe pause for a minute before you act. And so there's some of that going on, but this is not a substitute for training. And we always have to stress that.
So I want to talk a little bit about how wide this is spread. As you said, now it's on an app. So how many places currently have it? What's the idea of getting this kind of through the whole U.S.?
We have about 50 or so active departments in Minnesota now. And we're re-engaging communities right now because, quite frankly, when everybody was inside, There wasn't a lot of use during that time. So we're really in the process of re-engaging communities, and that's been fun. But what we've done, and I think it's important to mention again, is because we have this profile 911 service, we've been able to expand in almost every state. Not a huge footprint in every state, but all you have to do is have an emergency response center, a 911 center that has the technology, it doesn't matter where you're located. But as far as expansion, of course, we've done like some companies where we've kind of done a lot of social media and digital marketing, and that's been okay. But really what has been really exciting is we have really started digging into partnerships. We feel like we don't want to necessarily be the expert, but we want to work with the people who are already working with people, like ARC Minnesota, like Autism Society. They already have constituents that trust them, that are utilizing their services. And so what we want to do a lot of times is we want them to introduce us to the clients, because we feel like that's a better way to do it. So we're expanding that way. We're starting to bring on, what we have to do is we have to bring on communities of people just as much as we have to bring on first responders. And so, for instance, we're going to make an announcement in a few weeks that we're going to Colorado for the first time. There's a city there.
Wow. Congratulations.
And thank you. Thank you. The faucet is turned back on. So we're going to announce that city. And what we've learned, because we've had time to learn, is that, you know, it's great for the police department to have it, but it's more important for individuals to have it. So even before we get there, we're contacting advocacy groups, organizations that have access to people that could use this. And so they know that we're coming. And so that's how we're looking at doing it. Candace, you probably could talk about how we're doing it with you. You're a great example.
So as I mentioned earlier, I work with small providers within the Twin Cities that service individuals that can benefit from this. So in during my process with the intake, when individuals reach out to me to begin that process of becoming a provider, I walk them through the steps and what the resources that's available to them as a provider, as well as to the individuals that they serve. Because as a provider, it's great to have such resources, because I said the individuals that they serve are typically in the community on their own. Majority of the time. Yes, they do have staff some of the times, but staff is not with them 24 hours, 7 days a week. So for them to have the beacon on them when they're out and about in the society and in the community, even though staff is helping them with how to, kind of de-escalate on their own, a device such as this is helpful when and if they should become into a sticky situation, whether it's with the police department or first responders. And even if there's in a group home setting, it's beneficial as well, because if a client has what are called adverse behaviors and first responders come and they have such a device on them, when they pull up, they're able to know and assess the situation and to help the staff instead of being more of a contradiction in a sense in that situation.
So I want to talk about that individual type of approach a little bit, as far as, obviously, you're wanting the individual to be a good advocate for themselves with this. What happens if they fall unconscious or something? Does the app pair with anything else that it might work with? Can it tell if you've fallen? Can it tell if you're not responsive?
We don't have access to that technology yet. We are constantly talking to companies that want to partner with us, mm-hmm. that have certain things like that. And so down the road, we're going to have some exciting announcements, I'm sure, where we will, you know, we don't cover everything, but we could have others where we integrate the technology for that. But as of today, we can't tell that. But I can say, like, if an individual has a Vitals app or a beacon and they fall and they are unconscious, the beacon is still working. So when somebody approaches them, they're still going to be able to get that information,
right?
Regardless.
Well, my understanding is that the Apple Watch does something with this. So what the thing that I was explaining. So I wonder, might be an interesting pair in the future to try to, you know, see if there's some way that the Vitals can work hand in hand with it, because I could see that being a great thing where it would alert somebody if somebody had fallen unconscious or a diabetic was having sugar issues. And then when they got there, bang, they had some of the information so they could understand what was wrong.
Yes. Sam, you're going to get me in trouble if I talk about what we're working on.
Can I prod you and say, what are you working on?
You're going to get me in trouble. but
I won't tell.
I just think that's a great idea, though. I really do.
Excellent. Okay. All right. Well, I'm excited because I know people who need that, you know, and I think it's super important to, you know, it's one thing if you have a watch or something that tells you, that alerts if you've fallen and if you can't respond, that it calls 911. But that's all great and fine. But when the person gets there, how do they know what's what? So, yeah. So there you go. There's your next assignment.
There you go. You want to join our team?
That could be interesting, actually. Can you tell us a little bit about the different ways that you've seen this app help people?
Oh, this is the fun part. We have amazing stories, and we can kind of spread them out. I wanted to tell, I've got two or three stories, but I'll start off with a young man named Marcus. Mm-hmm. Marcus was probably about 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago now. First of all, Marcus lives with Asperger's.
Okay.
He's in his 20s now, and he needs support from his mom, but he's able to kind of, you know, do a number of things, play sports and play video games. I mean, he does a lot of things on his own, but he does need support. Well, Marcus, a few years ago, was with some friends, and he was at the wrong place at the wrong time, and the officers that responded to the scene told the people to disperse, to leave the scene, and Marcus could not process quick enough, and he didn't obey any of those commands, mm-hmm. and he ended up getting taken down and injured by the police.
Oh.
A year later, a similar situation happened involving Marcus. It was in the Metro Transit bus system. It was well documented in the media, and Marcus was tased multiple times, and our team at the time that were working on this technology, they saw that we were able to get in contact with Maria, Marcus's mom. And we said, we're working on something that could help Marcus. So Marcus ended up being in one of the test groups. Marcus was in a St. Paul school building one day. Mm-hmm. There was an altercation in that building, which escalates people sometimes.
Yes.
And police responded to the scene. They got in the hallway, and the Vitals app kicked in, and they had all of Marcus's information. They were able to de-escalate the situation, and nobody got hurt. So we were excited about that. I've got another story that I can tell real quick, if that's okay.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And I got a third story that's amazing, and we can spread them out. But the other story is Caitlin. Caitlin, and I still know the families. Caitlin is her. They describe it as cognitive disabilities at the time. That's how they described it. She was very active in Special Olympics. She had a part-time job, and she was able to drive a little bit. And what she memorized her routes, I can say it was, she had a job, a part-time job at Walmart, and she was able to memorize her routes from home to her job. And so she is maximizing her independence. That's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. Well, she got signed on when she saw it. She's in Dakota. She lives in Dakota County. So she thought this would be perfect. Her parents thought this would be perfect for her. And so she got signed on to Vitals early on. So one evening she was on her way home from work. And unfortunately, the highway that she normally drives on was shut down because there was a traffic fatality. So they were blocking off. And then the other route that she knows was closed due to road construction. Now Caitlin is panicking and nervous. She calls her mom. Her mom says, you know, just circle back around, park, and ask the officers. They'll help you. And so she did that. The only problem was earlier in the day, the officers got a call warning them to be on the lookout for underage drinkers because there was a big house party that night, and look out for people 18 to 25. And Caitlin was in that age group. So when the officer approached her car, Caitlin was very nervous. Her voice was, you know, shaky, and she was talking slower than normal. And so the officer immediately thought she might be impaired. And so he called for backup, and they were going to put her through the DWI protocol. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, the officer that responded in his vehicle to the scene, they had recently got vitals. Before he got out of his car, he got an alert, and he was able to identify Caitlin. He was able to see that she had a disability, and he approached her in a totally different way. And they end up escorting her home instead of putting her through DWI protocol. So that was a success story.
Okay, so this is exactly my point with this should be mandatory for all officers.
Yes, I agree 100%.
You just made that whole point for me. I wouldn't have even had to say anything earlier. So I circle back with this is going to be an important thing, I think, especially, well, now during this time, you know, as we've been in the COVID time, I realize that the numbers are going down for now, and hopefully we're on the downslide of getting better. But I think the world has made a shift, and I feel like society has shifted, and it's much more likely to have people who are, you know, doing whatever they do for whatever reason they do it, and it's not always good. And so there is going to be a difference between how you handle somebody with a disability, regardless if they're up to something they shouldn't be, or if they really just need help and they know, and it's just they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. So I really would, I don't know how you can, what you can do to do more, you know, advocacy about pushing the police force to have this, like it should be on board for all of them. But I do think that's an important, you know, thing to do. And let me go one step further in saying there should also be a way to tag what officer that deals with these vitals apps is dealing with the situation at the time. So if a mistake is, you know, made, that there can be some learning involved, you know, that they can correct things.
So I would love for Candace to take part of that, because I know she has a network and she talks to different organizations at the state level and local level that might be interested in things like that. But I will say that when we have our technology does allow for us to know exactly the officer that has an interaction with one of our folks. Now, we will not release that information in the aggregate. Mm-hmm. I mean, but we have access to that information, so we do know, and we've had a couple of occasions where the department asked for it. So we do have some of that information.
I do. This is a time. I'm sorry. Were you going to do more?
I was hoping Candace, because I know Candace, you know, you mentioned organizations like the multicultural. I mean, there's just different groups that they kind of live in that public policy world, and this is why having partners like Candace might help get it to the get this stuff in the right hands.
Yes, so that's definitely one of my main missions, in a sense, is to get this, as I said, because I see the benefits on both ends, being in the community hands as well as in the individuals that needs it hands. So I'm a part of a couple different organizations that deal primarily with individuals in that assisted living or group home settings. So the plan is to get in the forefront and get in front of them, let them know that this app is here and the benefits for it from, as I said, from all perspectives. Mm.
This is usually the time at some point that I tell my research person to unmute. So get ready to unmute, please, Charlene. And I want to know if you have any questions for these people in regards to the Vitals app.
I just wanted to revisit the app itself is stable, and it would be hard for somebody to breach it. Is that correct?
Yes. We one of our founders, he's amazing. He was one of the founders for the technology that started the digitizing mortgage loans. And so he lived in a world of, we call it bank level security.
Okay.
And I will say it again, where, you know, we're not the company that's gonna say nothing will ever happen, because too many companies, something has happened.
Right.
But we're up there in that level of, we have that bank level security, that encryption that we are protecting. This is the most important information that a person can share. And so we have to protect it. We have to protect it.
Okay, that's good to know, because you're pretty serious things that people have going on. And if the officers learn how to deal with it, it's going to make things a little bit better for a lot of folks.
Yeah. And Charlene, the other thing is, part of our agreement is you're volunteering to give this information temporarily to the officers. And so you can't see me on the radio, but I am a Black man with a couple of Black kids, and I work for this company. I'm a leader in this company. And of course I have concerns about how that interaction can go. So when I say we need people to be trained. We need people to treat everybody the way they should be treated. And of course, Vitals is a tool and a resource that can help give them more information in a timely fashion, but they need to know how to do it in a trained way anyway.
Yes,
exactly.
Is there anything else you'd like to cover in regards to this app, guys?
I love Candace, you could go first if you have anything.
No, I don't have anything.
Okay. I've got one final story I want to tell.
Love to hear it.
So my favorite story is it's a gentleman named Jack. And he lives in the Baxter-Brainerd area. And those departments got signed on pretty early. And Jack, he has several conditions that make him vulnerable. Bipolar, depression, schizophrenia. And so Jack is taking meds that make him feel like he might want to hurt himself sometimes. And so when he saw this, he's like, I got to get on, because I already know sometimes I feel like I want to hurt myself. And so I need to be proactive. Right. And so he got on, and he really spent a lot of time to create his profile, and just in case if he needed it. And so one Saturday evening, he was feeling like he might hurt himself. He called his brother. His brother called 911. Jack has a beacon in his glove compartment of his truck, and he carries one on him all the time. And so the dispatchers called the first responders, and Jack was going to hurt himself. And so before they knocked on the door, they got alerted, all his information. And Jack, his profile read, you know, if I want to hurt myself, please repeat over and over and over to me that I don't. Please keep telling me that I want to live. Talk about my wife. Talk about my two girls. Just keep telling me over and over and over again that I want to live. About 45 minutes into it, they talked him down. And we received a message from him the next day saying, I think you guys saved my life last night. After hearing that story, aww, I still get goosebumps, and it makes this worthwhile to me.
I have one more sure question. I can.
Oh, yeah, go.
Have you guys started working with the Department of Veterans Affairs?
We, you know, that keeps coming up as a great partner, and we haven't yet. We were having initial conversations with veterans organizations prior to COVID. So we know that that's on our radar, and it's a perfect group for us. Because Jack, he has PTSD too.
I used to work with vets, so I kind of picked that up.
Yeah. Okay. Great question.
You sure I can't tell you or convince you to tell me what you're working on? What would you like to see for the future of this app? Either one of you or both.
I'm going to go, Candace, because I've been talking a lot.
I think we're on the same wavelength anyways. I would love to see this in the hands of all first responders, all police officers, as well as with individuals that need it in the community. That would be the ideal situation.
And I would love to see this app become the app for safety and security and independence for anybody that needs it. And I would love to partner with the right organizations or companies that already have technology so we can embed this into that technology. That way people have another layer of protection. And I want it to be for everybody to have. I want it to be something that is just normalized in life. And because I believe the more that we share this, the more conditions keep adding up. Everybody has something that might make them vulnerable. Mm. And this is a way to communicate when you can't.
Right. Well, you guys, I wanted to thank you so much for giving your time. And this is a volunteer effort for all of us. And so thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And good luck on the app. And I look forward to seeing more and hearing more from you.
Thanks for having us.
You are so welcome. This is Disability and Progress. The views expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Chris engineers tonight. Thank you, Chris. Charlene Dahl is my research team. Thank you, Charlene. We've been speaking with Dan Allen. Dan's the board of directors co-chair for ARC Minnesota. He's also chief communications officer for Vitals Aware Services. We were talking about Vitals app and continuing to expand nationally to better serve people with disabilities and mental health conditions. We're also joined as well by Candace Ellis, and Candace is a mental health practitioner who spoke about how closely she works with people that can benefit from this app. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. Remember to check out our podcasts, as we do have many of them now. And if you want to be on my email list, please email us at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. Feel free to suggest topics or anything else you'd like to talk about on the show. Fresh Fruit is up next. Thanks for listening. Good night.